iInternet, that's what we're going to find out about today. Christiane Rooten is going to tell us all about it. And I've got a few questions to you. If you bought day passes, day 1, 2, and 3, you're going to get the 4th for free. So please bring your bracelets, and the 4th day you're going to get them for free. We'd like to challenge you to give us a bit of feedback. You can do that on our webpage with Christiane's talk. And in the schedule, click on it, and then you can click on feedback. But you can also do it on Twitter, for example, using the hashtag 26C3. And use also the hashtag P4ULA, Paula, so we know that it's about this talk. Thank you very much. Well, good luck. I'm really wondering what you're going to talk about.
Yes, okay. Hello, everybody. Yes. It's great. Thanks a lot. But just wait until afterwards. So it's always very exciting to speak to you, to so many eager minds. So let's have some fun. So first thing, when I was preparing for this talk, and doing the research and trying to find sources for some of my assumptions and all that, I basically came on one paper by Dr. Martin Warnke. He is a scientist at the University of Lüneburg in Germany. And he pretty much dealt with most of the basics I'm trying to cover. And so there's one thing that struck out to me. And it's pretty much this passage of his introduction. There's a problem with hard science because, well, it basically says here, I'm just going to read it out. And just because there's a very different degree of certainty where we can prove or at least convincingly affirm, like in the hard sciences, this certainty comes at the price of being unable to talk about those things that cannot be proven or computed. And these are the things that are actually happening in the sphere of society, culture, and contingency. And so, that's my point. So, don't take this too seriously. Let's have some fun and see where this leads. So, the first thing, and this is pretty much along with Warnke, he defines the development of our information culture, of our informational systems, by three stages. And the first of the stages was just when the early computers came into existence, and they were mainly used for synthesis. That means you give the computer some instructions and then it starts computing a pretty picture, line art or whatever, and it just does pure synthesis. It's totally computable and it's what Turing's machines do. The little TMs, those are the Turing machines. So the next step came when the computers became more powerful and the interfaces became more human-like and better adapted to the humans, and the output got better consumable by humans. The realism started to increase. That was the mimetic phase. That means people started using the computers as tools for, well, let's say, generating animations and generating or doing interactive arts and this. So when you look at this diagram, you will see lots of Turing machines and people communicating with those Turing machines, and those Turing machines are networked, well, pretty much today as the internet among each others. So once you start with people, or let's say individual minds, in such a network, you will have what is called contingency in there. That means, the contingency means you get some factors in there that are either true or false, but may well be somewhere in between. So let's call it uncertainty in a broader sense. And there's another thing in these networks that can be observed, that's called the autopoiesis. And that basically means the system wants to, well, creates itself and preserves itself. So, and what this leads to is the latest stage that we are seeing today. It's the emergence stage. So that actually means The systems that we're using and we're part of today cannot be explained by the sum of its parts. So there's even more to it. And, well, just to grab ahead a little in the talk, when you look at these graphs and the constituents in there, and you will take a broader look from far away, it will all shrink down to one node. And this node, let's say we're looking at a bunch of Facebook users here using their computers, which are networked. And when you look at it from far away, it will appear as some Facebook individual and acting with its environment. So this is the self-similarity aspect of those graphs. You can zoom in, you can zoom on the people, and you will see they contain of cells, they're constituted of cells, and so on. So just to keep it in mind. And it was Luhmann who actually, one of the system theorists, who actually came to this conclusion. When you say there's autopoiesis and the system creates itself, then emergence is not just accumulation of complexity of the constituents, but it's a break and a fresh new start. And what this actually means is that the systems that are generated from some constituents of some complexity do not necessarily inherit the complexity of the constituents. So a very vast system of communicating people and machines can have much less complex characteristics than, well, the humans inside of it. So this is one example of emergence. There's a German website, let's say it's a news portal, mainly that has a forum. It's from the news portal of Heise.de. And they've got a forum. And this forum, it has several threads where the people, well, say whatever they want on the topic. And this was on the topic of, well, it's some kind of fashion. Each year there's some farewell wishes for Christmas and New Year. And this was the response. I mean, this is pretty, you would expect that. There's lots of, oh, yeah, nice work, and we wish you a pleasant New Year and all that. That's pretty standard. But what right away struck me was this year. I mean, this is actually the system used for voting on the quality of what the people write in the forums. And it's pretty much known that there is some kind of green wave going on when there's a topic discussed that generally is appreciated by the people in the forum. It all goes green. It's a green wave, whatever people say there. It's all, the red wave is known as well. It's when they totally disagree with what's in the topic. So, but this is an alternating pattern suddenly emerged. So it isn't even possible that one person started this, because you need to have at least 10 positive votes to get it into the green, or 10 negative votes to get it in the red. But somehow people got it that it was like that. I mean, it's pretty fascinating. It's just emergence going on. Cannot explain it by what individuals do. So if you're looking at what's happening in our brains and in our networks, it's one of the most basic networks we have. It's constituted of biological neurons. And basically, these do have some very similar features like the networks we are used to in the internet. There's some inputs, definitely, and that's the dendrites. That's the fluffy part going on here. And you've got the axons. These are the outputs. These are the thick ones. And they will somehow crawl around the brain and find a dendrite to actually connect to. And what goes on in such a network is nothing more than just electrical impulses. That's pretty simple stuff going on there, but there's quite some emergence going on. And if you want to understand what's going on there, you just need some sort of model. So this is where the artificial neurons comes in and neural network theory. And this is pretty much what, well, can be used for modeling neural networks. You've got a set of inputs, from the dendrites. You've got some weighting functions, like how important do I think input number 3 is? It's just another factor in there. It all gets somehow summed up. And then there's some kind of threshold function, just saying if the activity generated by this function here goes above a certain value, I will just activate my output. And then there will be an impulse sent to the next neighbors in that neural network. So the dots actually are now neurons. And this is how they're connected. And this is a fairly simple model of what's going on in neural networks. So you have some kind of input layer. That's the green stuff. And this is passed through a filter level layer. And if the filter layer decides, okay, this has been important stuff going on there, then it passes it on to the output. And to the output layer, where it is somehow, well, going through your mouth or whatever senses there are. And I mean, you probably can already see the analogy to our communication networks. If there's the input layer, say it's some Twitter users, and they will Twitter about, well, let's say 26v3 is happening and everybody's happy about it, then the filter layer that's surrounding them will pass it on to the adjacent nodes, which is basically the output layer. So when you're looking at individuals, I mean, I think, therefore I am. Maybe you're Borg. Pretty much that's all you know about yourself. There's something going on in your head, and that's me, and, well, but where do I start? Is it just a brain? Is it just a part of a brain? Or is it even, well, my spinal cord? Or is it my hands, my fingers, my eyes? What defines me? And this is a comic I found from Abstruse Goose. It's called I, Cyborg. I'm trying to get it a bit bigger. That's it. So on the top, there's the brain and the spinal cords. And it's connected to, let's say, the tongue and the mouth through nerves. And from there, it's going onto the cell phone, which consists of microprocessors and so on, and a big antenna on the other side. So where's the boundary? I mean, same goes on with the monitor, the eyes and the monitor and the hands and the keyboard and the computer. From computer, it goes into the internet and there's Google and Twitter and whatever going on. And so I just liked it. It was pretty much what I'm trying to convey. There's no real boundary that you can define. This becomes clear when you think about artificial limbs. So if your arm is severed or something like that, you might get prostheses. And is it still part of your body? At least it works pretty much like the old one. So augmented reality is another thing when you enhance your senses with when you know you're looking at the sky and you're pointing your phone at there, you can see the constellations. You wouldn't know otherwise. So is it becoming part of you when you perceive it through, let's say, your cell phone, what's going on outside? What it all boils down to in the individual is you've got some input going into an individual. In our sense, it's mostly through our senses and eyes and so on. And there's some output coming out of it, like I'm talking to you now. And I might interact with physical stuff. So input, output, that's pretty much all there is. Okay, and once you reach the part that you cannot really make a boundary and between the people interacting and even the systems they are forming by interaction, you will get lots of Borgs. If you say that these systems actually act like, well, individuals. There are some individuals which are pretty renowned, like Google or, sorry, I mean, individual is not the right word. I mean, it's corporations. It's something that the American law even has made a persona for. They even act to the outside like they are a person. And What I was trying to show is there are quite a lot of collectives in this sense going on, like the states, governments, the religions, of course. Those are the very old ones. Then we have the media, the new media, and, well, the general AT&T, General Motors, and all that. So let's go into detail on some of them. I mean, political parties and governments, they form some sort of group that comes together in a congress or whatever, and so they form some sort of collective which is taking input and generating output. And they had a problem. They've always been there, but they were pretty slow on catching up on the internet. I mean, it was like just a few years ago that they actually started thinking really about it. So they're a bit slow, obviously. There are really few constituents in there. There are just a bunch of, let's say, 600 politicians or so in the higher parts of the government. So they will have to deal with few constituents. So when you go to corporations, it has been a bit difficult. They are very hierarchically structured, like there's the boss on top, then there's the leaders for the units, and so on. It's quite static in its nature. So, but they've always been very good at adapting new technologies to their internal communication and even external communication. And basically, the corporations among each other were very well connected through the jet set, like traveling abroad and have a meeting and communicating what's going on there. So actually, the corporations, you can look at a corporation as a Borg, but you can also look as the network of corporations as one bigger Borg. The media is also a very classical one. It has got the function of reducing complexity and passing it onto a lower complexity level. And so the media has pretty much been some kind of filter layer in these networks that we're looking at, neural networks. So everything pretty much changed with the internet. And this is so new about it. I mean, the last big thing like that was inventing books and printing. And now there's the internet. There's blogs and forums and all that stuff going on. And it's really, really fast. It's totally unprecedented in history that people can reach out to so many other people. And which basically for the graph means it's much denser and it has connections in both directions. When you look at the distribution models of television, for example, it's just broadcasting. There's no channel back to the TV station. So that's low latency, efficient distribution, and everybody can participate. And let's look at some of those Borg in particular that I find quite fascinating. I mean, they even start giving themselves, it even starts giving itself a name. So if you go on the 4chan board, especially the notorious B channel, then you ask, who are you? It will tell you, hey, I'm anonymous. And so since there's no ID going on there, you have got a network that is characterized by the topics. So you've got the boards, which are under a subject, and everything in the board is somehow related to that subject. It has a very short memory. It's very good at forgetting, because everything that isn't really repeated will scroll out of the lists and it will be totally deleted. There's another nice aspect about this. Nobody seems to care what's going on there. You will find everything there, and it's not always fun. They're doing it for the lols. That means they try to have fun. They create lots of memes. I mean, there's obviously going. There's lots of creativity going on there, and so that's certainly a Borg to look at. Twitter is the other one that I'm particularly involved with. It's another one of those people who can somehow be, well, grouped together as Twitter users. And if you look at the network, you will find that there's an average of 126 followers to every Twitter user. And there are about 2 million tweets per day, and up to 300 tweets per second, and on special occasions. And it's in the contrast to the 4chan, it's ID-centric. So you have got identities in there, which, of course, are complex human beings. But when you step back and look at the Twitter, you will see a system that is not as complex as those constituents. So, and this is where the self-similarity is coming in. When you look at the Twitter network, you can put input in there and you will get some output. You can also go take a subset of people who are related in a topic or field. And so you will actually get clusters that are highly specialized. It's like in our brain, where we have clusters of nerve cells that are, well, used for speech or used for pattern recognition or these kinds of stuff. You will see the same patterns going on in such social networks. So there's one problem with Twitter. It's brutally complex in its network structure. This is a failed attempt. I tried just visualizing the followers in not just in depth one, but in depth two, that were 180,000 nodes in there. And this is after, this is the point where I broke the simulation off. That's 40,000 vertices have been drawn, and it's, well, let's say 5% complete. So it's very hard to get an actual idea of Twitter when you don't select the nodes for some kind of features, like only the nodes that are more than 200 followers or whatever. You take some value and cut those off. Now, if we're saying there's some collective consciousness, some Borg in these networks, some as an emergence, and you're comfortable with saying that it might be not as complex as the people taking part in this, you should be able to see some very basic emotions going on. And let's look at some of them. I think I can make out. I mean, Borgs just want to have fun. Definitely. And probably most of you have seen this. One day, one little neuron of the Twitter Borg network just had this idea of writing a song in code. And, well, it was quite an event, because it started out with a small group about maybe 1 or 2 days, and then it spread like an infection over the whole network. And I think I know very little people in my Twitter surrounding that haven't actually taken part of it. So that's obviously there's no self-preservance going on, there's no fear, no whatever, they're just having fun. So this is a bit of a sensitive topic, but probably one that is a bit speaking for itself. There's been a loss in the community. It's most of you might know him, or at least heard about him. It's a 1UP. And there was one striking thing about this. I personally never met him, actually, in person. So I just had some of my neighbors in this neural network saying, oh, somebody has passed away. And they were actually, they knew who it was, and they knew him personally, and they were just expressing condolence in a way I never could, because I didn't know him. But that actually made me sad, just because I knew other parts of the network were sad about what was going on or what happened. It was some kind of contagion going on. And so large parts of the network, I mean, there have been several 10,000s of outputs of this network stating that there's condolence and they feel sorry, and it was quite great thing going on there. I mean, it's like the whole network, or at least large parts of it, suddenly, well, wore black and were a bit depressed about what happened. Um, Okay, there's some sort of anger going on, definitely. If you're looking at the debates in politics and politics, you will see that the network can get very angry. The board can get very angry. It's mostly against politicians that are known to be conservative. And there will be lots of spite, there will be lots of anger going on, and you can actually see it. I'm a bit sorry, I don't have the examples ready, but you might catch the drift. But the most important part about it is the fear part, I think. It's a very, very basic human emotion that we all take for granted. And what it usually boils down to in most cases is some sort of self-preservation, the fear of, well, not being existent anymore after something happens. And it's usually something about being in control of your environment, like shaping it in a way that's beneficial for you or at least doesn't harm you. And especially about the competitors which are in the neighborhood. So since when you look at the Twitter Borg cluster, you will see that there are adjacent clusters going on, especially there's a politics cluster with governments and, or let's say a local government. And you could actually see those two fighting over, well, over the debate or over, okay, I'm missing the word here. So the censorship debate is actually about control. I mean, if politicians decide to implement a censoring system into the internet, it's like being able to flip a switch and, well, let's say Twitter is gone or whatever they want to be gone. It's great power that's been introduced there. And, of course, you would expect a network or a collective like Twitter to agitate against it, of agitating against being controlled. And this is why there's this strong attitude towards information freedom and no censorship and all this going on, because it's like being controlled by an external collective. And this is a bit of my personal experience. What does it feel like being a Borg? I mean, most of you probably know what it's like, but I would express it like that, because when I'm actually following political debates, which I'm not really taking part in because I don't have the time, I would just look at my filter layer in the collective around me. And this filter layer, because I can actually choose where I link to, is pretty efficient in filtering the information that's really relevant. So I can get hours of political debates and still, I can miss hours of political debates and still get, let's say, the 50 most important talking points and who said what. And what's pretty amazing about it is that the constituents passing on the information to me might include more information from their memories or their ideas. So it's even enriched information that gets to me. And, well, I think it's never been before like that. I mean, the way we are connected to the internet and the other people there has just such information density going on that this is certainly a new quality. And so there's one thing being learned here. I mean, being Borg, I mean, we've seen Star Trek and all that. The Borg was all the voices at once in the head, but actually it's quite comfortable. You're just talking to your filter layer and, well, it passes on what it decides is important, and it passes to you what the filter layer thinks it, is important. So there's not this overload of having to see everything at once or so. But I think it's still an enhancement going on there with all this life experience that you can actually share with others. And now, since it's unprecedented in history, the speed with the information and all that, you have some very powerful features of the collectives that have been established. There's the collective intelligence. I mean, that basically means you if you hold up a jar of marbles and you will say how many marbles are on that glass, you will, and I will ask each one. That will be, the first one will say it's 81, the next one will say it's 52, and so on. And most are off, but if you take the average value, you will find the correct number of marbles in the glass. So this will be applied to many things that probably are above the level of the individual. I mean, if there's a technical question being discussed or something like what's been left to the politicians like 20 years ago, there's totally somebody in your collective neighborhood that will know about this thing that's being discussed. And so this is another point where the network becomes more than the constituents could be in a sum. And this actually inspired Neil Stephenson of putting it rather awkwardly but nice. So there are no more Heinleinian polymaths, instead a web of geeks all whom knows a lot about something. So this is a thing. Share your information. Go ahead and just tell other people what you know about, and bring yourself in. I mean, that's the best part about it. We can communicate outwards, so this will only improve of it. I mean, you can actually even say, okay, I will tweet everything, or I will put on Facebook everything that I see today or whatever, and don't really care about it. I mean, your filter layer will decide what's worth passing on to the rest of the network. And the symbiosis that's going on here, it's also pretty new. I mean, I'm using my telephone for communicating with people. I'm using my computer for getting in to the collective, to dial into the collective. And there's some kind of symbiosis going on, like at the beginning, this diagram where you couldn't really tell where the human begins and ends. And there's definitely more ahead. You will see that there might be implants coming up for enhancing the brain power or for better storage, or we even had body modifications going on, like tapping into the nerves and controlling processes with it. So there's definitely more to see. And, whoops, not yet. The thing is, when you look at the classical collectives around us, you will definitely see that they're usually controlled by very few people. It's with the politics, it's with everything else, very little people. And so instead of a network of 100 ideas and let's say 600 politicians in the government, there are just 600 people there, 600 life experiences, 600 times, let's say, 8 years of studying and so on. And what's new is we are many. There are hundreds and thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people connected like that in a pretty efficient manner. So the collective intelligence can actually work for us. So there are more ideas around, let's say the Twitter networks and so on, that could be taken into account, and we should make good use of it. And that's pretty much what I was trying to get over. And don't forget, resistance is futile.
Well, thank you so much, Christiana. Are there any questions? There are two microphones, or maybe just one. There's a microphone over there. Please, if you want to go to the microphone. Now we can all hear it.
I don't have to repeat the questions?
No, you don't have to repeat the question. Does it work?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So thanks. First, thanks for the presentation.
Welcome.
It was thanks for the presentation. It was really interesting, this kind of collective individuality, or this is your idea. And my first question is that why did you avoid the most omnipresent term of cyborg? Was it intentional, or it was a choice, just a choice? This is my first question.
Okay.
And the second question is that, because, I mean, Borg is...
Let's do one question at a time, okay, yeah, then she can answer the question.
Okay.
Okay, so I have to ask back, what do you actually mean by the cyborgs? I mean, they're completely... well, at least from our perspective now, they are completely synthetic organisms. Mm-hmm. So what Luhmann and other system theorists have stated is that you need actual things that are not computable. So there's not much uncomputable going on in a cyborg. Mm-hmm. And so from all that we know now, there should be some sort of human involvement or other biological neural networks. So that's why I wasn't looking at it.
But cyborg being the cyber organism, so the thing is, even you can call a human machine symbiosis a cyborg. Mm-hmm. So this was the reason. I mean, Borg means cyborg. But, I mean, if you check the some online sources, I checked and it means the same. So this was a little bit kind of ambiguous for me. So I thought that you meant something, that you meant that it's not only about the information systems or cybernetic systems.
Yes, I didn't choose the Borg because of the cyborg aspect of them, but rather because everybody knows the Borg have been some sort of humanoid species a couple of thousands of years ago. Mm-hmm. Or was it longer? Whatever. So actually there are some very natural brains going on with explants and implants, and so this is pretty much something we might be heading to. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the more interesting and more wide-ranging effect than going on to totally artificial life forms.
Yeah. And my second question is that having this said, your presentation as your ideas, what's your take on a seminal piece of essays like Donna Haraway's Cyborg Manifesto? So you're saying that this whole thing becoming a Borg or cyborg, it means that it's getting better in some sense of gender politics?
Mm-hmm. In general politics, you mean, let me rephrase the question, the more we start... becoming using explants and externalities like Wikipedia for memory and all that, it will improve on politics. Is that right?
No. The thing is, okay. I mean, you just the whole thing that you said to the point that I got it was that, you know, we are our collective individuality is becoming a kind of Borg, using mm-hmm. all these online services and tools and also the hardware that we are using and these kind of things. So mm-hmm. there is this seminal piece of literature which is called Cyborg Manifesto by Donna Haraway. It's not something recent, it was published in the 70s, if I'm not wrong. And in that article is being debated that having this cyborg approach, which was pretty new back then, it might bring a kind of more neutral gender politics to the world of human beings. This is the gist of what she wants to say. And I wanted to know that you are just saying that you are just extending the whole thing to the internet, which may, does it mean that it brings a more neutral net for in terms of gender?
In terms of gender, I mean, that's already going on. I mean, all the queer stuff going on. I mean, of course, definitely, because... what's different about the new media is that you actually have equal parts of men and women taking part of it very actively. When you look at those old collectives like corporations, like politics, or even academia, it's pretty much the same there. Traditionally, it's like it was a job for the men going in there, and so it's especially influenced by their way of working, their way of, if you can propose on that. And so, of course it will, because those issues will be discussed and being brought up in a more equal fashion.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. Next question, please.
I don't know if I can say it's a question, maybe a common one, that you had this thing about collective intelligence on these boards. I have been using message board for many years, about 13 years, okay? And you can sometimes, if you go into some very technical special subject, you can get quality information. But if you take these general boards, actually, I would say it's a collective non-intelligence. You're seeing that... You will see that, like, when people begin to discuss this, it's actually much more about who can come with the fastest shooting from the hip argument rather than somebody who is actually coming with quality information. You could say it this way, that if on Slashdot or Dig or 4chan, if they were discussing if the world was flat, everybody would come to the conclusion it's flat because it's obvious. You can just look out the window and you can see it's flat.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a kind of so-called collective intelligence that happens on many of these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't live without these things because you are really getting valuable information, but you really, really have to filter enormously to get it.
Yeah. The thing is, when you look at 4chan or other boards, you will have a lot of noise. There's always, with any signal, you have noise. And the ratio is actually very bad when you look at, let's say, 4chan.
Yeah.
You will have some sort of filter between it so that you don't have to look at it. That's better, let's say, in Twitter. Let's stay in the Twitterverse. You can actually choose which other nodes to connect to. And you wouldn't connect to those not matching your interests or matching your intellect or whatever. So you're pretty flexible in... to whom you listen. And if there's a meme somewhere coming up at 4chan, it will pass through the filter layers and arrive at you, so you don't have to look at all the nonsense. So it pretty much it's a question of perspective. If you look at the noise, you will see noise, of course. But if you filter it through those kinds of networks we are using today, well, you can make use of it.
Yeah. My general point has been to take as... But can you say so technical as possible, then you can usually get the good information. That's what I've seen. If you take these general boards, you are losing information in some way.
Yeah, okay. But I think it's provided by the filter that will deal with it.
Any more questions? Please walk to the mic, and you're very welcome to ask it.
Oh.
The mic is over there.
I have a partial response to the question that was just given, and it's also in agreement with Christiane. When we think about filtering the information that we look at online, one thing that is neglected is how much filtering we do with the information that we receive in the real world. So many of us, we don't read tabloid newspapers, right? So there's all this information in the world. There's hundreds of television stations bombarding us with information that we don't look at, or tabloid newspapers in all of the languages that we read, full of information that we're not looking at. We filter to see what we want to read. The internet is similarly full of things that we don't want to look at, and that doesn't make it special. So your idea, other people's ideas, that the filters that we choose to bring what we want to us, and that our networks do that, and thus our intelligence has become greater, is exactly right, I think.
Okay, thanks.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you. I think that was the last question / comment. Well, thank you very much, Christiane. I think it's very clear that the collective intelligence and consciousness doesn't change that much from our individual. We use only 5% of our brain. Maybe the collectiveness doesn't use any more than that.
Okay, great. Thank you.